Hi, this is Bob Wells here, and welcome to Undercurrent Stories. This is the show where we hear about people's interests and uncover some fascinating stories at the same time. I hope you enjoy today's show. Hello and welcome to Undercurrent Stories. For centuries, Ireland's stones were more than just a feature of the rugged landscape. The ability to pick them up off the ground had deep practical and spiritual meaning. Lifting stones were used in tests of manhood, and in a few cases, womanhood. Hoisted at funerals to honour the dead, carried at weddings in celebration of the couple, and used to determine whether a man was strong enough to earn work as a farmhand. But in the 18th and 19th centuries, during British colonisation, the practice largely vanished. Most of the stones remained untouched where they were last lifted. That is until now. And in today's show, I'm delighted to be joined by David Keown, now known as Indiana Stones and responsible for bringing back Ireland's lost culture of stone lifting. Hello and welcome to the show, David.
Thank you so much for having me on, Robert. Really appreciate having you. Thank you so much.
Great to have you. What an exciting project you've been doing. And thank you ever so much for coming on the show. It's great to have you on. David, before we talk about the stones and stone lifting, could you just tell us a bit about yourself, please, and you know, your life's journey and how you got into lifting stones in the first place, please?
Yeah, well, I suppose I started off like a lot of people. At the age of about 20 to 30, it was just party scene. I was into art and music. So I still play quite a lot of music. I play it out in the night times as well. But I was just into this whole party scene in my 20s and got into my early 30s, and my body started to rebel against me, as it does. lack of sleep and too much drink and smoking and all that goes with it. So I was in a bad place, kind of physically and mentally, and I decided to do something about it. So I started running, and running kind of, it started my whole fitness journey. I went from not being able to run out to the top of my estate where I live to eventually being running a marathon in about 6 months of training.
Oh, wow.
It was incredible. Yeah, it was just amazing because I really enjoyed the running. I injured my knee a little bit when I was doing the marathon because I had no strength training done. I was just running for 6 months. And that's how I got into a strange Russian endurance sport called kettlebell sport. Just through the gym, I joined the gym and I was doing kettlebell classes. And then I found out that there was an actual sport attached to it. And I was told that, look, your body type will suit it. You got nice long arms, you got a sharp torso. You'll suit the sport, give it a go. So I gave it a go. I started off on 216s and I won my first little small county competition. I remember thinking, so I'd never won anything in my life. I'd never won anything. And I won this, I'd beaten two other guys and the hooks were in me then with kettlebell sport. And the journey through that went through then the following 8 years, from about 2012 to 2019, almost 2020, I was lifting kettlebells, got into the national team, and won national European and world titles.
Sorry to interrupt, David. What type of weights were these kettlebells?
Starting off here, it's 216 kilo kettlebells and it's clean jerk.
Wow.
So it's starting off at 216, that's the novice weight. So novice weight is 216s. And to get onto the national team, you have to lift at least 224s.
Wow.
So the amateur weight is 224 kilo kettlebells, clean jerk. Non-stop, no rest for 10 minutes. So you can imagine it's pretty attritional on the cardio, you know. And I just got hooked with the technicality of it. I loved the process of it. And I got my tunnel vision. I tend to be that kind of a person. I just kind of get tunnel vision about something. And I got into this, really, really into it. And getting on the national team was a massive moment for me. I mean, going from being a big blob and not being able to run out the door like Joe Sixpack to getting on a national team in a sport in a couple of years was absolutely amazing, you know. And
yeah, you must have had to be very obsessive about it.
You'd have to be, you know. Yeah. You'd have to be. To get to a level in a sport, you have to get obsessive and you have to cut all the things out of your life, you know. Thankfully my wife and kids stayed with me over those years. But like, you know, all parties, all that kind of stuff, going up, that all stopped. Just got obsessed with the actual sport, with the physicality of the sport. But I mean, through that I got to travel the world, Robert. I got to meet some wonderful people. I got to go to Australia, Kazakhstan, Russia. I got to go all over Europe. I got to compete in different countries, like being an ambassador for your country abroad. And like, I got up into the professional weights then, which is 232s, which is really, really tough. But you get a lot of respect in the community for that. You know, I got up to that for a couple of years and hit all the goals I wanted to hit.
For those that don't know much about kettlebell lifting
in
competitions, is it just, when you say it's like a certain weight each time, is it all to do with endurance? Do you have to keep
lifting? Strength endurance, exactly. It's strength endurance. So I kind of say to people, it's kind of like Olympic rowing, that it's kind of like short bursts of max effort followed by short bursts of relaxation.
Yeah.
So it's like you're cleaning the kettlebells between your legs. Like you're swinging between your legs up into your straight to your waist, to rack position, and then you're bumping them up with your legs up overhead. And you're doing that nonstop for 10 minutes. So you can imagine the attrition that is on the, So when 10 minutes with 232s, it's pretty, pretty tough. I mean,
I feel pretty tired already listening to that.
Yeah. it's a tough, tough thing. And I mean, and the thing I'm most proud of then is when I went and I set a world record in endurance with 216s. I'd done 216s for 2 hours nonstop lifting, which was probably the pinnacle of my kettlebell sport. Yeah, 2 hours straight. Even thinking about it now, like, how did I do that? You know, but I mean, you get to a level where you just build it up. And then I just wanted to express myself and see what I could do with it, you know?
Yeah.
So that was wonderful. So like the kettlebells was a fantastic journey. I got to coach it. I'm still coaching kettlebells. I've taught workshops all over the world and stuff, and it was fantastic. But then COVID struck hard, like it did with everybody, you know? I mean, we took it really seriously over Ireland, maybe too seriously, probably, but there's this really stringent lockdown of 5K, you know? I mean, you couldn't go anywhere. You were stuck at home. There was Garda police cars like roaming the streets. You couldn't leave your house. It was incredible. It was like...
Wow.
It was really, really weird. You know, I mean, I couldn't go to the beach. You couldn't go to the mountains. I snuck out one morning, Robert, to try to go to the mountains and early, just because I was going stir crazy. I was going mad, you know, and went up to the mountains, got to the car park at the top of this mountain lake called the Cumra Mountains. And there was a Garda car. And he told me to get in the car and go home. And I was like, it's just you and me here. There's nobody else. I'm going to walk up that mountain. He's like, you're not, because if you walk up that mountain, I'll take your reg and I'll find you. So I hop back in my car and go home. So it was just a crazy couple of years, But I mean, like that, my access to my gym equipment was gone. My access to the kettlebells was gone. So it's like, what the hell am I going to do now? Because like training has become such a part of my life and it's part of my mental health. You know what I mean? And especially over that time, but like I was still working. I work in, like I said, I work in the builders providers. So we were open. So I mean, the only shop that was open was us. So the whole of the southeast of Ireland was pretty much coming to us to get paint and to do DIY jobs, because just to keep yourself mentally sane. But I couldn't walk up a mountain. It's weird. But I mean, so I was coming home and like I had no access to the gym. I had no access to funnel that aggression out until I spotted my wife's lovely stone carving at the back garden and weighed that on the kitchen scales at 61 kilos and just started picking that up. And I started picking that up and that was a great stress release valve for me. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, that's great. I'm picking up something heavy. It feels good. And it was like, this is actually an interesting process. It's interesting picking up a stone. It's difficult. It's awkward. You're out in the grass. Grip becomes an issue. So you're training a lot of things at the same time.
Yeah.
And that was just to keep me sane over COVID. That's how I really got into stone lifting. I'm sorry with the big long, I talk a lot and I come around in loops. But that's how I got into stone lifting initially was just doing that, you know, just for mental health over COVID. But that led me on quite a journey over the past.
Well, I mean, and so the next phase of it, I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. First of all, I mean, your sort of epiphany, et cetera, when you did your marathon and then you started the lifting of the kettlebells, that's a big turnaround in itself. And then with COVID, so I guess if it hadn't been for COVID, stones perhaps wouldn't be where they are now with you.
I'd say probably not, you know, because I mean, it changed a lot of people's perspective, didn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
it did, yeah. Yeah.
It changed a lot of people's way. It did. You know, people were forced to think differently. So it forced me into thinking differently, into adapting to my surroundings, you know. And I'm just so happy I did.
Just before we talk about, you know, the culture and the history of, which I'm really keen to talk about, just the sheer lifting of a stone. I mean, it's not nice and rounded like kettlebell, is it? Or weights with a bar.
No.
You've got something that's cold, dusty, wet, possibly damp, strange shape. Yeah. How does it feel?
It feels incredible. I mean, it's something primal about it. It's hard to explain. It's like it's deeply rooted in our DNA. I mean, this goes all the way back. You know, there's thousands upon thousands of years because there was nothing else. I mean, gyms are a relatively new phenomenon.
Yeah.
So like just to lift a stone, the feeling of it is deeply rooted in, I think, who we are as human beings, you know? And like I said, it's the actual physicality of lifting it. Like the texture of the stone, they're all different. Just some are smooth like marble, some are rough, some are rounded. Some are edged, you know, some are more difficult to grip than others. Even some might be lighter, but they're harder to pick up because the different textures on them. You're out, like I said, you're outside. I mean, I love training. I train on the beach, Benvoy Beach, down by me. It's about 15-minute drive from my house. And I'm on the beach, and it's a little cove. It's only about 150 yards long. And there's all these different boulders out there. So I just go out and I train there. Like, that's my gym. And like, there's never anyone there because it's really secluded.
Wow.
And it's just, you're out there. You're in the sand. It's just you and nature, you know, yeah. whether it's raining or not. If it's raining, I don't mind. No. You're in the mid, you're immersed in nature. Yeah. To me, it fulfills a lot of you know, spiritual need as well. You know, you're out and you're immersed in nature. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing to do. Getting out of that sterile gym environment. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the gym. I was there for years, and I enjoyed the camaraderie there. But this is something totally different again.
The other thing I'm very interested in is the tradition that goes right around the world. I mean, there's stones in Ireland, Spain, Scotland that I've been reading about. Have you been to see any of these other stones? Have you been in touch with any of the people that you know have rediscovered these, or have they always been? Is it just in Ireland that they sort of went into the background, or have they gone into the background in different countries around the world?
No, I mean, it's like if you go back to 2012 in Scotland, I mean, there was only two known lifting stones in Scotland in 2012, and that's not too long ago. You know, there was only the Inver Stone and the Dinny Stones, and they were the only two that were known 10 years ago, 11 years ago now. But a man called Peter Martin, who is unfortunately now deceased, he made it his mission to go around looking for the ancient Scottish manhood stones or Clucknirt. That was his life's passion, and he went around and he done that. He found about 30, with another almost 60 to 100 that he was looking for before he passed away. But he found those himself. He brought that culture back, literally himself. He dragged that out of the earth, you know, and he was one of my main inspirations. So I went over to Scotland because I'd heard of the Fianna Stone, which is, to anybody who knows Celtic mythology, the Fianna were a very, very famous band of Celtic warriors. They were like the best warriors of the age. 2,000 years ago, maybe more. And in Glen Lyon in Scotland, there's a Fianna Stone. And they said one of the tests to become a Fianna warrior was to lift this stone in Glen Lyon, obviously for the Scottish branch. But that just, I couldn't believe that. You know what I mean? It was like, we were taught tales of the Fianna and the Fianna cycle in primary school. So like, you're brought up with this, what we thought was mythology. It turns out, it's not mythology. It's there, and they're sitting in a field in fucking Glen Lyon in Scotland. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're like, that's mythology and reality meeting up. It's like, it's just this meld of both. But I met some great guys who are continuing on Peter's work. Guys like Jamie Corrigan, Martin Jansitz, some wonderful guys over in Scotland. And I messaged them and I said, look, you don't know me from Adam, but I'm coming over. I want to lift some of these Scottish lifting stones and get in touch with my Celtic roots. And they were like, brilliant. You know, they were like, come over, we meet you. You know, and like, these guys are, they're on this documentary made by Rogue Fitness about 10 years ago. And they were well respected and well known. You know what I mean? And they were like, no, I'll definitely meet you. And we definitely go lift a few stones together. So I just thought that was a wonderful thing to do. You know, they didn't know who me, but I knew them from watching these documentaries. I must have watched them 10 times. I thought it was fabulous. And over I went and met those guys and lifted, I think it was 16 stones in 24 hours.
Wow.
Went all the way around to Scotland, around the Southern Highlands, the Northern Highlands, the people, the landscape. It was just an incredible, incredible journey. And the last stone I lifted was the Fianna Stone.
Yeah.
So that is a moment for me, is something I never ever forget.
So how long would that stone have been sort of, you know, like because presumably the stone, you can't carry the stone too far. It's left in situ. But
it's on a little plinth, yeah.
Yeah. So it's been there all those centuries.
Centuries and centuries.
And what happens? The stories just come down from people, do they?
Is that the stories come down? That's it. I mean, they're written down. And what I'm finding with the Irish ones is they're written. A lot of it is oral culture. A lot of the ones in Scotland are written down. They're told from father to son, mother to daughter, that this stone was there, and the people have respect for it. They have huge respect for it. You know, these are cultural items. These are, I think, they're actually listed cultural items now as well. A lot of these stones, you know.
Yeah.
And that stone has been sitting in that field for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Wow.
In that area. And that's what grabs me. It's like, I'm going to put my hands on something that possibly a Fianna warrior put their hands on 1,500 to 2,000 years ago. The exact same stone. I mean, you're not talking about history or reading it in a dusty book. You're going out and you're putting your hands on it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. And you think how many hands have touched this over the years, or how many lives have come and gone, and how much has this place changed in the past couple of hundred, maybe thousand years, and you're still there, and you're carrying on, you're the next link in the chain, you know. It's a beautiful thing. That's what grabbed me. It's the history of these things grabs me.
Yeah. Do we, I mean, I'm in England, but do we have any knowledge of any stones in England, perhaps in the Lake District or in Wales?
I can practically guarantee it. You know, even guarantee it. I mean, because, like, I've only been finding out recently about, like, the amount of, like, dolmens and spiritual sites and standing stones that are in England. Because, I mean, you think this is purely a Celtic thing. No, there was a massive interplay between England, Scotland, Wales and Ireland. You know, over thousands and thousands of years. There's stone circles, there's standing stones, there's giant stones, there's dolmens all over England. I would say there was a lot. I don't know if there now is, because I suppose maybe that Celtic feel was kind of stamped out in England. I don't know. I don't live over there. I'd like to know what you think on that. Do you think maybe that's the reason there was...
I honestly don't know. I mean, like I say, yeah. I mean, the first time I heard about lifting stones, and excuse my ignorance, was when I heard on your, you know, on your podcast. But I know as a kid, you'd have sort of fairy tales and stuff like that my grandfather used to tell me. And there was always a tradition of a rite of passage, particularly for young men. I'm not sure about young ladies, but particularly for young men, to sort of show their prowess, to show their strength. And I guess...
That's exactly it.
And you see that, do you?
That's exactly it. I mean, a lot of these stones, like the Scottish ones especially, the Scottish ones were rites of passage from Bigot to Manot. So, yeah. I mean, every glen in Scotland and every clan had the clan testing stone. To become a man, you had to lift the stone. That was it. So you either had to lift the stone to a plinth or lift the stone to the chest. The whole clan would gather around, the young boys would come, they would lift this stone, and then they would become a man, and everything that comes with becoming a man, then you can get married, you can, you know, whatever comes with it. But until you lifted that stone, you weren't a man. You know, so these manhood testing stones were very, very important. They're very, very important parts of the culture. And like I said, it's a beautiful rite of passage that we just don't have anymore, you know? And I think we're kind of sadly missing that, to be honest with you. You become a man because you've done something difficult. You know, you had to train for it, it gave you a purpose. And then you've done it. And, you know, you've then become a man. So I just think it's beautiful. And a lot of the stones in Ireland were similar to that. I mean, especially on the western coast and on the islands off the west coast, you had these rites of passage stones, which I just think is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yeah, it is. And like I say, since you've been, I mean, you know, you've become quite famous with what you've been doing. I love your name, Indiana Stones, on your
that's
Instagram. that's a great bit of marketing, I think.
Yeah.
Have you found, I mean, what's the interest been like from other people on, you know, with what you've been doing, particularly younger people? Are they interested?
I can't believe what's happened in the past 2 months. It's like I've stepped into an alternate reality. I've been doing this because I thought it was a cool thing to do. I thought it was an interesting project, an honourable thing to do, to maybe bring back something that was lost.
Yes.
But it was just me going around in my car for the first 18 months. People were like, yeah, that's interesting. You know, and you're getting a couple of likes online, but roundly ignored, you know. What's happened in the past 2 months has been, it's like suddenly it's gained a whole cultural life of its own. It's like the whole of Ireland has woken up to it and kind of gone, hold on a second, this is actually really interesting. This was a culture that was, whether it was taken from us or lost through, you know, oppression or the famine or the, you know, all of that. And now it's coming back. And it's like the whole of Ireland has taken it on. I mean, I have people on the daily going to visit these stones, sending me pictures, sending me stories they'd heard of from their parents or their grandparents. And it's taken on its own identity. And it's alive and it's back and it's such an honor to be a part of it. You know what I mean? To be the person who lit the fuse, because that's all it took. It was only a very thin veil put over this, you know?
Yeah.
And I just started pulling on the thread of that veil, and all of a sudden, it's back now. And there's people going to lift the stones, and there's people wanting to come from all over the world to lift them. And you're on the news, and you're on the fucking television, and you're on podcasts. And it's been such a weird turnaround, but it's great. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. It's been a little bit mentally jarring because it was just me for so long. And now, you're suddenly invited onto talk shows and you're invited onto the TV and people are really interested in it. It's become kind of weird, you know, because I'm still going back to work on a Monday. So, like, I feel like this fucking Clark Kent kind of Superman thing, because during the week I'm just in work, mixing paint, talking to customers. And on the weekend I could be talking to fucking Tommy Tiernan. I could be talking to Jack Rayner or Sam Creedy, the actors. I could be going for a pint with anybody talking about this. I could be on a massive podcast and then you're back to work on Monday. You know, it's just been so strange. But it's great to see the culture back.
How has your family reacted to your sort of newfound celebrity?
Sure, you're just dad. You know, the kids are just dad. It doesn't
dad and the
difference.
Husband. Yeah.
That's it. But in fairness, my wife has been such a, she's been blown away, but there's, because like, I'm just going off the weekends the last couple of years doing this, you know, and it's just, yeah, just he's gone off and be back now at lunchtime. But now it's like, hold on a second.
You talked about going on TV and podcasts, and obviously that's how I got to hear you. There has to be a book in here somewhere, David. There has to be a book.
Yeah, I'm holding up the
you are.
Books I'm writing at the moment. Yeah.
Are you? Fantastic.
I've talked with a publisher. The book is practically written now. What I'm doing is I've been journaling. What I call it, my Grail Diary. If they call me Indiana Stones, I'm calling it the Grail Diary. I've been journaling as I'm going. So the finds, how I found them, who contacted me, meeting them, how it felt, the stories they're telling me, then to go to find the stone. Do I have to hack through hedges to find it? Or is it standing in a place that's it's prominent? And then the lifting of it and how that felt. And like, I'm going through the whole thing from start to finish on each stone, you know, so each stone has its own chapter. And some of the stories are, they're incredible. I mean, they've been amazing, you know.
Could you just give listeners an idea of, say, just one story that you found particularly enthralling, particularly interesting, and or maybe surprising?
Oh, sure. The one that I think really has captured the imagination of the public has been the Liam O'Flaherty stone on Inchmore, you know. So, like, when I started this, Robert, I was like, there's nothing. If you type in Irish lifting stones now, you just get pictures of me and all the things I've been doing the past 2 years. But 2 years ago, there was nothing at all. So I typed in Irish lifting stones and I got a story by a man called Liam O'Flaherty. After much digging around, there's a man called Liam O'Flaherty, who's a very famous writer from the Aran Islands. He's from Inishmore, actually, off the coast of Galway. And he wrote a short story, 9-page story called The Stone, which talks about an old man and lamenting his kind of lost strength and virility in youth. And the way he describes the old man, and he's walking down this old boulder strewn pathway, and the way he's like so frail and gaunt now, but the old man gets emotional. He starts thinking about the greatest day in his life. And the greatest day in his life was, there was a stone on the island that was lifted from time immemorial as a strength test. And I said, it was a great day in any young man's life when you could get the wind under that stone, which means lovely, pure poetic way of saying to lift the stone off the ground. So if you get the wind under that stone, it was a great day in his life. If you can get the stone up to his knees, he was a champion, equal of the best, you know, and men spoke of him. If he could stand up to his chest, he was a hero of renown and to be spoken of for generations to come. He remembers, then the old man remembers when he was walking down the pathway. He remembers the great day in his life when he went to that stone. They were at a wedding. There were men there who kind of famed for their strength and beauty. And they went down after loads of drinking and carousing the night before. They went down to see who could lift up that stone. And he among all the men, lifted that stone up to his chest and said the shout that resounded through the village. He could still remember it now as an old man, you know. So he then goes to that stone again. As a bent and wizened old man, he tries to lift it, dies in the attempt. And what happens is then at the funeral, the young men of the village remember the stone again, and they start going down to lift it, and it's reborn again. The stone is reborn again, you know. So the story is incredible. It has everything, as life, it has death, it is how you deal with getting older. You know, it has, in a short 9-page story, it's unbelievable. So it's like, what an incredible story, right? Then I start researching the Aran Islands. And I see, remember I mentioned a guy called Peter Martin from Scotland who brought back the Scottish? He was talking to a woman called Fiona on a Reddit thread 10 years ago. And Fiona, he was talking about the possibility of there being maybe being Irish lifting stones. And this woman answered, or just her name was just Fiona. And it said, the story that Liam O'Flaherty wrote about is based on an actual stone. That's the stone he wrote about. I'm pretty sure it's still there. It's called Gurtna Coppin in the Aran Islands. And I hope this helps you. So I was like, what? This isn't fiction. This is an actual real thing. You know what I mean? Because the story is so beautiful. I must have read it about 50 times. I was like, hold on a second. This is real. So I looked up then. Oh, shit. Okay, Gurtna Coppin. I looked it up on Google Maps. And like, there's all these stone pathways. So I was like, okay, fuck. I got to go and see if that's there. You know, just on the off chance that it's still there. So myself and my friends go off in a camper van. We drive over to Galway. We get the ferry from Rosseville on the worst day in Irish history. Hissing rain. Wind, high waves, 45 minutes out into the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, swell of waves. We get to the place, we rent 2 bikes, and we cycle the 25 minutes to this place called Gurtna Coppin. So we hop off the bikes and we're walking down this track. And anyone, if you haven't been to the Aran Islands, it's like, it's just rocks. It's just stone. The whole landscape is stone. It's like surface of the moon. It's just, there's no grass. It's just rocks. So like, how am I going to find a rock in a field of rocks? How am I going to know which one is the one? So I've kind of gotten to get a little bit downhearted. But I had the book in front of me and I was reading the passages as I was going. And it gave a description. He said, the old man walked through a stile. I was like, there's a stile. I walked through the stile. Then he was walking down and he spotted a stone on the right-hand side in a little hollow. And he said it was a round block of granite and the sunshine shone upon the particles of mica and the surface of the stone. I was walking down, there's the round granite stone. I was like, that's it. That stone he wrote about, you know? So I go over and like, my friend of mine was down another, there was another track as well. He was down that and I started shouting and roaring at him, come here, come here, I'm about to find him, I'm about to find it. We went over and there's the stone that Liam O'Flaherty wrote about the story. And there it is. And that's not the end of it. So I mean, I tried to lift it then. I couldn't lift it. It was too heavy. So I come back a couple of weeks later with a friend of mine from Scotland. And he gets a fantastic lift on it, the chest. He's one of the best owners in the world, Jamie Gorry. I broke the ground with it. I got the wind under it. I was delighted. And we weighed it at 171 kilos, which is massive, right? Bigger than any of the Scottish lifting stones, the mainland lifting stones anyway. So it's like, wow, what a huge stone, you know? And 171 felt so far away from me at that stage. I was like, I don't think I'll ever be able to lift that. You know, but I got the ground, barely brought the ground with it.
Yeah.
But as I was walking back, there was an old man giving a walking tour to some Americans. And he was like chatting away about the area. And I said, look, excuse me. I said, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Do you know anything about the lifting stone down there? And he's like, oh, yeah, I do. He said, yeah, that's the Mullaghan Port Vale and Dune. He said, I was like, what? The Mullaghan, he said, that's the name of it, the Mullaghan Port Vale and Dune. That's the lifting stone, the one that Liam O'Flaherty wrote about. I was like, yes, validation. That's 100% it, you know? So I was like, that's incredible. Like, it went from being fiction to being an actual real thing. And it gets better, right? So it's like 16 months pass. I'm training mad just because this stone is in my head. I want to lift this stone. I want to lift it. And I'm out the back building all winter, just nonstop lifting. I get invited by the Liam O'Flaherty Society, run at the O'Flaherty Festival every year in Inishmore. They get wind of what I'm doing. They're like, come over and lift the stone as part of the festival. It's like, fucking talk about a full circle moment, you know? So like, you come over and like, there possibly would be some of Liam O'Flaherty's relations there. Jesus Christ. So I train hard. Nationwide, we're a RTE show. They get wind of it, they're coming over. A couple of other film crews get wind of it, they're coming over. So the day comes, I go back to the same place again, back down stone the pathway through the stile, back down to the place. There's about 100 people waiting there to get wind of it. All the locals, all the islanders, 4 or 5 big, huge cameras, boom mics. There's a young lad reads the story of the stone with an iron jumper on. I remember he reads the story of the stone down by the stone itself. One fella read it in English and a girl read it in Irish. And then in front of the islanders, like the old man and the story did, I lifted that stone up to my lap. And it was like you became the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You actually became the story. And the shout, there's a line that said, the shout from the islanders resounded in his ears. And he can still remember to this day. The exact same thing happened to me when I was hitting that stone. The shout from the islanders, they were like absolutely amazing. I was like, I'll never forget that as long as I live.
No. That's got to so be the high. That's got to be your high point, isn't it? That.
How can you top that? I mean, it's like you read the story, you found out it's not fiction, and then you trained for it, and you went over and you lifted it in front of. And what happened at the end? Then remember, I said the Fiona who was talking to Peter. This woman comes up to me at the end. I'm Fiona, she said, because I was talking to her just at the start. I'm the Fiona that wrote that thread. I was like, what? She started me going there because of her. I said, because of you writing that thread to Peter Martin 10 years ago, I'm here now. I said, and what's her second name? O'Flaherty.
Wow. And did you find when you lifted the stone that it was absolute agony or because of where you were and all the people, were you sort of somehow subconsciously helped, do you think?
I think so. I mean, it was difficult because there was a lot of TV and interviews involved. And then I had to give a talk. We had a professor who was going to give a talk first, but unfortunately he couldn't make it. So I had to give a 10-minute presentation down at the stone first. Yeah. Then we had to have the reading of the stone and I had to sit down cold. And then it was like, now David, lift. So it was like, no warm up, no nothing. Go and pick up 171 kilo stone of brown granite off the grass. You know what I mean? So it was difficult because of the circumstances.
Yeah.
But But the training I done meant that, yeah, I felt confident. I put my hands around it. I was like, no, this is going to come up. As opposed to the first time, I was like, I'll never be able to lift this. It just goes to show you, I mean, what you can do.
Yes, if you put your mind to it and
exactly,
you know, become obsessed. So that's a fantastic way. I've got one more question for you, if that's all right, David.
Sure, yeah.
For any listeners that are interested in doing something similar, you know, wherever they are in the world, we might have somebody in any country, what advice would you give?
Sure. So first of all, where I found most of my stories was through the National Folklore Collection. The Irish government put folklore in the curriculum in the Irish schools back in 1937. So 37, 38, 39, they put folklore in the curriculum. So I looked up our folklore collection, and sure enough, there was loads of stories in there about men and women who lifted stones at crossroads or funeral games. And then I followed up those leads, and sure enough, a lot of them were there. A lot of them weren't, but a lot of them still were. So if anybody wanted to go look for them, I would check old folklores. That's where a lot of these come from. So if you have some kind of a folklore society, go look there, because that's a great start, you know. And then for the actual practicality of lifting, I just say to people, you can't beat lifting a stone to get better at lifting a stone, you know. So start off with something light. You know, it's a totally different lift than a deadlift and stuff. So like, go out, pick up a 40, 50, 60 kilo stone. Start light. Get your technique right. Get your back nice and straight. And make sure that you're lifting safely. And whatever feels right for you, work with that and build. And it'd be amazing, because like, I'm 44, you know, and in 16 months, I went from not being able to lift something to lifting 171 kilos. You know, so if you put your mind to it and you train for it, you can pretty much do whatever the hell you like, you know.
Where can people find out more about David?
Yeah, if people want to like look me up on Instagram, like I said, Indiana Stones is me. You'll see me with lifting the Liam O'Flaherty stone, the pink stone. That's my profile pic. So look me up on that, because I have all the stories on that, all the pictures. You can look me up. GQ done a great article on me there as well. So look up the GQ, and I'm on a lot of podcasts over the past couple of weeks, especially. So yeah. just type me in on Google, and you get a good few podcasts as well. But mainly Instagram is where I do most of my work.
Okay. Well, David, this has been a really interesting conversation. It's great to hear how you've been instrumental in sparking a revival of interest in stone lifting, and also hearing about the history and the culture has been particularly fascinating. Also, the story of how you became fit after a period of inactivity was quite inspiring, I found. I'm sure that many listeners will have been inspired to find out more. My guest today has been David Keown. You can find out more about David, or should I say Indiana Stones, on his Instagram page, details of which you can find on the show notes. Thank you for coming on the show, David.
Thank you so much, Robert. Really appreciate it, man. Love you talking to you.
You have been listening to Undercurrent Stories. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please feel free to share the show link to your friends and family. And if you have 60 seconds, I will be most grateful if you would please rate and review. To hear more episodes, please subscribe to the show and visit undercurrentstories.com. If you leave your email in the link, we will notify you as soon as new episodes are released. Also, check out our social media links, details of which can be found on the show notes. Until next time, this is Bob Wells wishing you all the very best.